When we think about the American system of finding a husband and wife, the whole process is just kind of strange, isn't it? The American dating scene is just a weird, weird relationship. And those of you who are in that time right now, I'm sure, are giving me lots of silent amens to that. Sometimes we tend to get ourselves in trouble, though, with that. We'll talk to someone, we'll say, well, I hear you're dating, and you mention the name. How's it going? And sometimes you'll hear the words, well, it's complicated. And when you hear those words, that is your cue to change the subject right then and there. Because what that means is that under the surface, there's a whole lot going on that's going to need lots of explanation. Well, when we think about that, we could probably use the same term in our relationship with the world. When we look at the Bible, one of the things we find about the world is that that term is used in lots of different ways. Sometimes the creation, sometimes people, sometimes the environment. We got lots of different things. But even when we think about it in the context that we normally think about it, I think we could also say that it's a pretty complicated relationship. And so this morning, that's what I'd like for us to talk about. We're going to talk about it, first of all, from God's standpoint, which is complicated, and then to look at it from our standpoint. And I think by the time we get to the end, we're going to understand what God desires for us to see in this relationship. But let's begin at the very beginning. In the book of Genesis, as we open up the pages, immediately we're introduced to God because it says, in the beginning, God created. And what we go on to read is that as God creates all of the different things in the world, in this physical environment, we find that it's good. In fact, God is going to end every section by telling us how good that creation is. And then once that's finished, he takes the very best of his creation, man, and creates an even better part of the world to place man. And so he takes man and he places him in the Garden of Eden. And what's really interesting is to look and see what man is told to do. So here he is. He's in this paradise. Adam is placed in it. And it says, the Lord took the man and put him in the Garden of Eden to work it and to keep it. Now that word keep is an interesting term, because what that means is to watch over and to preserve. You see, man was not there just to prune the trees or to take care of the animals. Man was there to preserve the paradise of God. Here in this section of the world, man was to take it and to keep it as God had given it to him. Sadly, though, we find that Adam failed in that. Because by chapter 3, the devil has come into the scene, and he's come to Eve, and he's offered all of these temptations to her. And as we look in chapter 3 and verse 6, it says, so when the woman saw that the tree was good for food, and that it was a delight to the eyes, and that the tree was to be desired to make one wise, she took of its fruit and ate. Now we understand that this is the tree of knowledge of good and evil, the tree that God had said, do not eat from this tree. But yet the devil tells the woman what a good tree this is, and she buys it, and she eats of it. But here's what I want us to notice in this verse. It says she also gave some to her husband who was with her. Adam was not in some distant part of the garden. He was not in a place where he wasn't privy to all that was going on. He knew exactly what was happening. And when Eve offers him this forbidden fruit, he takes it and he eats. And in this, he did not fulfill his responsibility. He did not keep the garden as he was told to keep it. He did not take and preserve it as he was told to preserve it. And so what we find in this then is that the very thing God had given Adam to do, he did not do. And what's even sadder than that, we know that his descendants failed in this. What's the next thing we come across? Cain and Abel. You remember when Cain killed his brother Abel, the question that he asked God? Am I my brother's keeper? Am I my brother's protector, his preservation? The answer to that was yes. But what Cain said in this was, the assignment that you have given me, I am not going to take. And from Cain on through the descendants, we find this downward spiral of mankind, the world growing more and more full of sin. This beautiful, pristine creation is now polluted by the blackness of sin, and something's about to happen. God says, I cannot allow it to continue on. He says, I'm going to destroy the world and all that's in it, with the exception of the new Adam. A man who had found grace in the eyes of God, Noah. And so God says to Noah, I'm going to destroy this world and I'm going to rebuild it through you. I'm going to protect you and your family. But let's look at the instructions that he gives as to what Noah is to do. He says, of every living thing of all flesh, you shall bring two of every sort into the ark to keep them alive with you. They shall be male and female, of the birds according to their kinds and of the animals according to their kinds. Of every creeping thing of the ground according to its kind, two of every sort shall come to you to keep them. That should ring very familiar to us. That just as Adam was put in charge of keeping the garden, here we find Noah put in charge of keeping the ark so that a new world can be created. And that's exactly what's happening. The wickedness of man is washed away. God allows Noah and his family to survive. They come out of the ark into this beautiful, new, pristine world. But sadly, what do we find? That it's not long before this new world falls straight back into sin. And though some time has passed, what's our next major story in the Bible? The Tower of Babel. And here is mankind saying, regardless of what God has told us to do to keep the earth, that being to multiply and to spread, we're going to stay right here together. We're all going to live and do what we want. And God says that's simply not going to stand. And he's ready for a new creation. But it's going to be different this time. God's not going to wipe the face of the earth. He's not going to start all over again as he did before. This time, God is going to recreate a new world within the old one. And so he finds a man who lives over in Ur of the Chaldees, and he says to him, I'm going to make of you a great nation, and through you all the families of the earth are going to be blessed. And he says, I have got a covenant that I am going to make and to keep with you. Let's see what's said about this between Abraham and God. God says, I will give to you and to your offspring after you the land of your sojournings and all of the land of Canaan for an everlasting possession, and I will be their God. God said to Abraham, as for you, you shall keep my covenant. You and your offsprings after you throughout their generations, this is the covenant which you shall keep. Between me and you and your offspring after you, every male among you shall be circumcised. God says, I'm giving you a new world, Abraham. I'm going to give you a family, large family that you can't even count, and you are to keep this covenant. If we want to kind of picture what this looked like, it was something like this. Here in this tiny little area of the Middle East, God says, I'm going to create a nation from you, Abraham, and I want this nation to allow the light of God to shine out into the world. This little world within the bigger world is to show people what it's like to be a nation that belongs to God. But we know the rest of the story, don't we? Because what we find is that Israel became as corrupt as the surrounding world. As the pages of the Old Testament unfold, we're told about wickedness, and we're told about leaving God and abandoning him for false gods. So the question is God finally done? He created a world darkened by sin. He floods it out of existence. He allows this new world to begin that grows dark again. And through Abraham, he says, I'm going to create a new world within this old world. And they're wicked. But God's not done. And as we look at the pages of the Old Testament, One of the things that becomes very clear about God's creation is that the renegade creation had turned to a new leader rather than God. In fact, the Apostle Paul identifies him as the prince of the power of the air. So powerful is Satan because of so many who have given their allegiance to him. His realm is called a kingdom. He's called a prince. He's called a ruler. But one other thing that we learn from the pages of the Old Testament, to a far greater extent than this, is the patience of God. That even though mankind keeps plunging back into sin, that the world keeps returning to darkness, God is still not finished. God is not done. And into this darkness, just as He does in Genesis chapter 1, God is going to again send light, this time the light of His own Son. And in the beautiful introduction to the Gospel of John, John writes, "The true light, which gives light to everyone, was coming into the world. He was in the world, and the world was made through Him, yet the world did not know Him." Here is the light that is sent into the darkness of sin. Here is God who has not given up on the world, though the relationship is complicated. And in this, we'll find the love of God extended. So kind of think about that example of Israel. Here is this tiny little light to show a dark world the way to God. Of a much greater proportion, we have God creating a new world within the old world. Much greater than what was given to Abraham. What we'll find this time is a kingdom that offers salvation. As we continue on in the book of John, Jesus has a discussion with Nicodemus. You'll recall that. And He says to Nicodemus, you know what you've got to do to come into this kingdom is to be born again. Nicodemus, confused by this, asks questions. And Jesus says, Nicodemus, you're not getting it. You're a teacher in Israel. And what you should know is the way that you get into this kingdom is by rebirth. You're born again by water and the Spirit. And that Old Testament idea is the purification that's given by God Himself and no other. So Jesus says there's a new world that admits those who will be faithful to God, who will admit those who are tired of the blackness of the old world of sin. It's a world, as John tells us, where the Creator is born into His own creation. The One who created the world is born into this world to allow others to be born again. Let's picture that also. Much more than this tiny little Middle Eastern nation. What we have is a kingdom that will draw all the world to itself. Here is the kingdom that spreads the light, and though it starts out small, it grows to great proportions so that in every place in the world, those who desire can find entrance into this new world, into this new kingdom. And in this, we're finding that those who will give up their allegiance to Satan and to give their allegiance to God will find the salvation that God has promised. So then, in John chapter 12, Jesus gives us the way. He says, whoever loses his life, whoever loves his life will lose it, and whoever hates his life in this world, the blackness of sin, the darkness of the world that turned its back on God, whoever will renounce that, to him I will give eternal life. To the one who serves me, to the one who follows me, I'm with him. He will be my servant, and the Father will honor him. So that's God's side of this. A God who has created and recreated and produced new worlds within old worlds. Here is His relationship. But let's talk about that in relationship to how we feel about the world. So we've got really the passage that says it all in John 3:16, that God so loved the world. But here's where it gets a little complicated. Because if we keep reading in our New Testament, we're going to come across a passage that's directed to us that says, do not love the world. The word love is the same, The word world is the same. The writer is the same. In fact, so serious is John in making this point, he says, if you love the world, the love of the Father is not in you. So it appears we've got a bit of a conundrum here. Is God telling us to hate something he loves? Is God saying we are forbidden to show love as he has shown love? Well, as in most things in the Bible, context is everything, isn't it? And so as we look in 1 John chapter 2, we find preceding this command to not love the world a bit of an explanation. John says, at the same time, it is a new commandment that I am writing to you, which is true in him and in you, because the darkness is passing away, and the true light is already shining. Whoever says he is in the light and hates his brother is still in darkness. Whoever loves his brother abides in the light, and in him there is no cause for stumbling. But whoever hates his brother is in the darkness and walks in the darkness and does not know where he is going, because the darkness has blinded his eyes. Now, what's all that talking about? What John is saying is that you've got a choice to make here. You can choose light or you can choose darkness, and your relationship to those will tell you what your relationship is both to God and to the world around you. And so John's point is, if you are seeking after the things that pollute, that are sinful, that darken God's creation, you're not a part of him. God forbids us. And let's pay attention to the strength of that word. Forbids us to love what spiritually destroys his creation. So what does that mean for us? Well, what that means in practicality and what John is saying is you don't play around with sin. You don't flirt with sin and say, well, I'm a Christian, but I'm going to get as close to wickedness as I can. I'm really not going to change my lifestyle that much. I'm still going to support the things I did before becoming a Christian. John says that simply does not work. To hate the world, according to John chapter 2, is to hate sin. Because the point he's making is this, that if we are living for God, we do not support the darkness. If we are walking in the light, we love as God loves, not as the darkened world loves. And he gives us an example of that. Going back to something we talked about earlier, he turns back to Cain and he says, we should not be like Cain, who was of the evil one. Why did Cain grow jealous? Why did Cain hate his brother? Why did Cain murder his brother? Why did Cain say, I'm abdicating being my brother's keeper? It's because he belonged to the devil. He had given his allegiance to the devil. He didn't inherit that sin from his father. He chose it very much on his own in giving a new king authority in his life. And thus John says very matter-of-factly, don't be like him. Because this is what happens when you give your life over to the wickedness of sin. And John says the reason that we don't do that is because we know the one who is the light. We know the one that the darkened world around us does not know. In fact, going to another writing of John back in his gospel, in chapter 17, he records the Lord's prayer here as the Lord is praying first for his disciples and then for those who would later believe. The latter part under consideration here, he says, I do not ask for these only, but also for those who will believe in me through their word, that they may all be one, just as you, Father, are in me and I in you, that they may also be in us, so that the world may believe that you have sent me. Jesus says, those who know me, I'm kind of praying for in advance. So in John chapter 17, those of us who are Christians this morning, Jesus was praying for us. That the Father would protect us because we know the Son. And thus we do not turn to the darkness. So then, with all of that being said, in this complicated relationship, is there any room for loving the world? If God says, do not love the world, is he expressly forbidding every aspect and point of it? Well, let's examine that. And again, we're going to get a little context here from John chapter 17, this prayer. Here Jesus is praying for his disciples. And he says, but now I am coming to you, and these things I speak in the world, that they may have my joy fulfilled in themselves. I have given them your word, and the world has hated them, because they are not of the world, just as I am not of the world. I do not ask you to take them out of the world, but that you keep them from the evil one. They are not of the world, just as I am not of the world. Sanctify them in the truth. Your word is truth. You talk about a complicated passage with the world. That's it, isn't it? But here's the gist of it. We've kind of narrowed it down to this saying that we're to be in the world but not of the world. Well, this is where it comes from. Jesus is saying, I don't want you to take them out. I don't want you to end their lives, but I want you to protect them because I have a mission of love that I'm sending these men to do, to carry out. Well, what is that mission of love? That mission of love is to take the message of the new world, the message of the kingdom to those who are lost. You remember what we're told in Mark 16? Go into where? All the world. And do what? Proclaim the gospel to who? Everybody. The whole creation. Whoever believes and is baptized will be saved. That's the message of love that those of the light are to carry into the darkness. Passage we looked at a couple of minutes ago, John 17, 20 and 21, so that they could do what? So that the world may believe. Here's the mission of love. We don't love sin. We don't love the darkness. We don't love hatred. But who do we love? Those who God does. And thus, what does God say to us? He says, you are to love your enemies. You are to love your neighbors. I don't know who's left out of that, do you? I think that gets everybody. So Jesus says to us, while you are to hate sin, and you are to hate the darkness, and you are to hate what Satan is doing to people, in your love for me and for your fellow man, you are to take this message to the lost. So that then brings us to the point that we are to emulate as sons of God, the Son of God. You remember that old hymn, Let the Lower Lights Be Burning? That's us. We're the lesser lights, we're the lower lights that are seeking to bring a darkened world to Jesus Christ as sons of God. We bring the world to the Son of God. So then, how strong is my love for the world? Not sin, but for those who are lost. It's interesting how quickly time flies, isn't it? About 1 year ago, I think next week, our theme for 2019 was introduced. And that theme was to go into all of the world and preach the gospel. And so for the past 12 months, we have focused on that. I remember when I learned what the theme was, the only qualm I had with it was this. I said, I hope we don't ever think that we're done after December 31st, that next Sunday we change gears completely because this theme is a permanent theme. Yet I don't have any doubts that we all realize that. And so this year, with this intense focus, as we look back on it, there have been souls brought out of darkness. There have been those of you who have taught the gospel to those you love, and they have been brought out of the darkness into the light. And even for others who perhaps shared the message of salvation to a heart that rejected it, still, your love was witnessed in that with every invitation to study, every invitation to attend a worship service with you, every time you said, let's open a Bible and read. That was an effort of love that was given. So here are all of those opportunities. But at the conclusion of this year, I think it's important for us to say, do I love the lost more than I did 12 months ago? Has this year of intensive focus on bringing the gospel message brought me to a stronger desire to serve the world by showing the love that God showed? How do I answer that question? Well, I think I can answer it in this way, that the strength of my love for the lost is about as strong as my hatred for sin. How much do I love saving the lost is going to be about equal to how much I hate what sin is doing to God's creation. A few weeks ago, I was asked to come and participate in a series of studies, and my assignment had to do with the idea of evangelism. And as I was going out, a lady who I've known for many years stopped me, and we were chatting, and she did not say this in any kind of braggadocious way, but she said, "I think," this is her speaking, "that in the fact that I came out of the world, I oftentimes have a stronger sense for what it means to be lost." Now, that being said, we all came out of the world, didn't we? There's none of us who were born into the kingdom in the sense of our physical birth. But I understood what she meant. There are many of us who have grown up in the comfort of faithful people. But in that great blessing, there is always the ever-present temptation not to take sin as seriously as we need to, not to understand it as the destructive force that it is, to the point that God would wipe out His initial creation because of it, that God would recreate worlds to try to deal with it. We perhaps don't quite get that as we should. So as we stand this morning at the conclusion not only of a year, but the theme that we've been focusing on rather intensely, I would encourage every one of us to re-bolster, first of all, our hatred of darkness, to never flirt with it, to never have anything to do with it, and to also re-bolster our love for the lost, to take the occasions we're offered to teach those who are in darkness, who are headed for destruction, to share the gospel message of salvation. Because in that, I think it's a pretty good standing to which world we belong. If we are truly citizens of the kingdom of heaven, as the old prayers used to say, we want those borders greatly extended, don't we? We want the kingdom to spread. We want people to come to the glory and knowledge of God and out of the darkness. And I hope this morning that that's where all of us who are faithful children of God stand, that we're going to look for those opportunities. We're going to take those occasions, not just in this year, but for the remainder of the years we have, to serve God by loving the world as He loved the world, and to hate those things that are bringing the destruction to those who could be a part of that blessed kingdom. So this morning, I offer that admonition to you, and certainly to myself as well. But this morning, if you're not a Christian, there's another aspect of the world we need to mention, and that's where you are. You're still in the darkness of sin. The world that was wiped out by a flood, the world that Israel was supposed to show the light to God, the darkness that John talked about, that's where you are. But light came into the world. And that light is Jesus Christ, who shines as brightly now as He did 2,000 years ago to show the way to salvation. So this morning, if you're in the darkness, God says, the light is ready. The light is waiting. And that means understanding that by God's grace you are saved. Nothing else. There's nothing that you can do to earn your way to heaven. God has paid the price. But He said, I want you to have faith that it's in Me and Me alone you find salvation. And to show that faith by believing Me when I say that sins are forgiven in the waters of baptism. That when you in faith go under those waters, you can come back up in faith believing that you are whiter than the snow, that the light is now shining in your life, that you're a part of the kingdom, that you're a citizen of heaven. Aren't you ready for that? Aren't you ready to put away all of that wickedness and come to the Lord? Maybe you did that. Because sometimes darkness encroaches. This morning, if you find yourself in that situation, God stands as the beacon ready to welcome you back in. You can be saved. You can be a person of faith once again. If we can pray with you about that, we'll do it. Whatever it takes. Let's walk in the light and show others that same walk.